Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl, Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
What up?
I did that like a robot.
You did. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Movie Phone. We did. Wow. It's a throwback.
There's a whole generation of people who have no idea what you guys are talking about right now.
Yeah, but we know.
Yeah.
And that's what counts. Screw the audience.
That's right.
Did we all get the joke that's 20 years old? Yes. Good enough.
Wow, this is off to a banging start, man.
Did it.
Happy Friday. Screw the audience.
Yep, that's good. How you do it. That's all how right. You do it.
Here we go.
Hey, what a week. Just another great week for everybody, unless your name is Liam Neeson. Hey, what happened? There was a Super Bowl. There was some movies that came out. Great horror documentary, new Lego movie, a Netflix series that came out last week, but kind of got all of its big buzz this week. So we'll talk about it. Lots of things happening. But first, we're going to do that thing we do at the top of every show where we talk about things that we're personally geeking out about. Adam.
Yes.
What you into this week?
Well, I started a new book. I had been between books for a couple weeks. It's weird how Words with Friends can totally eat up my usual reading time.
It is what you were doing when I walked into the screening of Lego Movie 2.
That's exactly true. That's the first thing is I have rediscovered my addiction to Words with Friends. Because I have improved my strategy somewhat, and so I'm winning more, and that always feels nice.
I had to back away from that game.
I think I have legitimately double-digit games going on right now.
I'm so glad that I'm bad at games like that, because it would be terrible for me.
And I like Scrabble. I enjoy Scrabble as someone who enjoys words in general, but this game is weird because you can just try things, and it'll tell you if it's a word or not, so it's always fun to try to invent words, and I think they should have a power up in there where you can force something to be a word once. You know, it's like, so I'm going to spend my power up and turn glorp into a word.
I see what you're saying.
For this turn, and then it has to accept it. That's my modification to the rules of Words with Friends. But other than that, I started a new book called Moonheart by Charles DeLint. It is actually from 1994. So listeners of this podcast may know my never-ending quest to read fantasy and science fiction books that are not a part of a never-ending series, because nothing irritates me more than just the constant churning out of book after book in a series to keep those cash registers clinging when a story that could be told. I'll give you three books, but then, you know, you're good. Anyway, so in doing my research on that, I discovered this book called Moonheart, which is set in Canada and features these two very twee book curiosity shop owners who discover something very curious in their shop of curiosities, and leads to an urban fantasy type story that is so far pretty good. I'm very early on, but I'm digging it. And once again, I'm very happy to know that when I get to the end of the book, the story will be told. And I can move on to the next thing, to more Words with Friends.
I was going to say, to another game.
Yes, exactly.
Not me. I'll never move on.
I know.
Anyway, wait, what's the curiosity? Is it the Movie Phone guy?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. No, this is set in 1994. So was Movie Phone actually a thing back then? I don't remember.
I think mid to early 90s is when, you know, when you actually called the number.
Movie Phone, yeah.
You know. Moviephone.com.
I mean,
maybe
it was
not
on Seinfeld, so you're right. It was probably.
I'm glad that we could settle this information
yeah.
Here live in the podcast.
If only there was some way that we could discover this.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, information like that is lost.
No, if only there was some kind of information superhighway. But
true.
Alas.
A way that we could network.
Nah. I wouldn't be interested to TBH.
You would need a computer the size of an entire floor of a building to process that kind of information.
Gosh, imagine if you had to work.
Think of how many
solely on something like that.
Think of how many punch cards.
What hellacious.
Oh my God.
Think of how many punch cards you would have to feed into that room-sized computer to process that. I can't even think about it.
Well, now I'm back into it.
All right.
I love a punch card. Hey, Karima.
Yes.
Other than punch cards, what's winning your week?
I have a couple things winning my week. First, Marvel made me a hero.
I saw that.
You finally talk about this. Goodness, a producer called me a while ago about this, but it was a video that, if you guys haven't seen it, Marvel put up. You can finally see what I look like if you don't know. Yesterday, basically, I got a chance to describe a hero of my own making and an artist that I never met drew it. They make it kind of seem like in the video that they're there with me. No one could draw in color and finish that quickly, that detailed. If it was just a head, I'm sure, because a lot of people do that at Comic-Cons. But yeah, I described this Wakandan warrior that I would like to see happen in the MCU. And what was really funny was by the end of my description, the producer and everybody was like, this actually could happen. And I'm like, should I have had everybody sign an NDA? Did I just like miss out on something?
You just gave away.
I just gave away some, a character.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. And if you have a chance to check it out over at Marvel Make Me a Hero, please do.
I look forward to, say, 5-10 years from now when the movie is making billions of dollars, Karima being the person who's outside of the theater going, this is the lie, this is a conspiracy, this is based on me.
Exactly.
And everybody's like, wow, look at that.
Look at that old lady.
At long last, a conspiracy I can get behind.
There you go.
And then the other thing I was geeking out about was, if anybody who was on Twitter yesterday, if you'd seen this, it was amazing. Basically, Gail Simone single-handedly got just about every single food product and restaurant from my childhood, I don't remember what else is, to fight over comic books.
Oh, wait. I saw the Wendy's stuff, but
Wendy's was not the only one.
It cascaded from there?
Okay. By the end of the day, there was Wendy's, Little Debbie, Steak-Ums, Hot Pockets, Burger King. Like, it was the most epic thing I'd ever seen, and it was really, really funny because the Wendy's one was great because somebody came at Wendy's, some, like, troll came at Wendy's.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah, because they said Marvel was their favorite.
And they were like, oh, you're just, you know, you're
jumping
just part
the
of the... And they were like, really? No, I got time. Let's talk.
That was actually the tweet. I have time.
I got time. Let's do this. And they broke down how they were a huge Saga fan and everything like that. And it was really, really funny because Steak-Ums was like, I'm a huge fan. She even got Checkers. Checkers was great. So she's like, I'm sorry, we keep talking Marvel and DC, which is great, but we're clearly Archie fans because there is a character that only eats burgers. Have you met us? I was like, this is the greatest Twitter thread in the history of man.
I tell you, these social media managers for these brands are not making enough money. Whoever's actually writing those tweets, some nerd is getting paid, you know, entry level salary to man the Wendy's Twitter feed.
But here's the thing.
Got that brand huge amounts of cachet.
I actually think, what if, this is my theory, what if each of these brands hire a service to take care of their social media feeds, and all these different brands' managers are all in the same office?
What if it's the same person?
That would be amazing. That's like Pepsi and Coke being owned by the same company.
That's
oh my
right.
God. So yeah, those are the two things I was geeking out, like the whole Marvel Make Me Hero thing. And then
if only we should bring those together, and Wendy's and Checkers and all those people should all get made into heroes by Marvel Make Me a Hero, and then they could have a whole fight and it'd be
that would actually be amazing.
Synergy,
also,
baby.
Also, I was really, really amused that Little Debbie and Steak-Um were still not only around, but on Twitter. So I think that Twitter thing was probably the most fun they've had on that platform. Because who's looking at the Steak-Um Twitter account?
Yeah, and that's probably the most awareness that has been brought into the Steak... Broughton. I just said Broughton.
Broughton,
wow.
It's okay. Woo. We knew what you meant.
He did it.
It's Friday.
But you know what's really funny? So many people are like, what is a Steak-Um anyway? And it was like, oh, honey, we don't have time. So anyway, that was what I was getting out about.
Yeah. I don't know why she's still called Little Debbie. Clearly she's grown.
Oh, and then there was this whole Little Debbie Wendy's thing.
Wayne is in his 40s probably now, and he's still
true.
Lil Wayne.
And Lil Bow Wow's like 35 or something.
Wait, is Lil Jon still Lil Jon?
Oh, yeah.
The answer to that is Yeah.
Oh God.
Okay.
I saw it coming, and we just couldn't get out of the way. Oh, wait, but here's the thing you guys have to look for. Lil Debbie and Wendy's started an argument about why Marvel treats its redheaded character so badly. I was like, oh God, this is, I can't.
Wow.
If you're ginger, you're not going to win here.
Yikes.
All right.
Well, that's that.
That's our show.
One of these days, I'm not going to take the bait. I'm just going to say, okay, if you're going to play this game, let's move on.
Well, what am I supposed to say? That would feel weird. That just sounds
or how
very
about,
strange.
Hey, do you guys want to hear what I'm geeking out
no,
about?
No, Adam, he wants your approval. This is a cry for help.
Yes.
It's been a long week for me.
Uh-huh.
It's had its ups and downs. You know, I'm feeling a little low today. The one thing that would make me feel better right in this very moment, and perhaps for the rest of my life, would be to know what you're geeking out about this week.
Gosh, no pressure.
Everything could change.
Danny, if you say no, I will hit you.
First of all, my Marvel superpower is that my hair is falling out very quickly. So I would like to say it's a very short-term superpower, but it's very impressive every time I step in the shower. Anyway, things that were winning my week. Are you still watching Discovery as it goes out, or are you kind of...
I have to bank them because my weeks are getting packed.
Okay. This week's episode...
Don't spoil it.
...is real good.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say is it's great.
I'll be watching it today.
I think that Doug Jones gets his due. I think it's maybe one of the best performances he's ever given. It's a really great Saru episode and other stuff too, but there's a real nice focus on him in a way that I feel we haven't had before on the show. So I was really impressed.
I was impressed by his karaoke carpool.
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of that sort of thing going on lately with Star Trek and singing and such. But yeah, so that happened. I watched the Supernatural 300th episode. 300 episodes. I don't know if you knew.
Yeah,
so
Negan comes back. Well, not Negan. It's John.
Yeah, so they got John Winchester, played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Look, was it a good episode? No, they clearly had the man for one day because he's got better things to do. But if you want a dad to tell his sons after 12 years, I'm so proud of you boys, blah, 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 then that's it. That's what it is. It's like an hour of that. And listen, I think that some people have man pain that they need to deal with. And that's the way to do it.
Also, Supernatural doesn't have to be good anymore.
No.
To stay on, it doesn't. It's got such a cult following. They could literally have Sam and Dean sitting and eating Cheerios for an entire hour and people would watch it.
Yeah, I don't think it's been good since 2010, but I still watch it every week. I think I kind of want to pour one out real quick for Albert Finney.
I was going to say that too, yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing that I saw this morning.
Just today,
82. I think he is the star and gives my favorite performance of my favorite Tim Burton movie, Big Fish.
I love that movie.
My standout favorite TB film. And he is so, so phenomenal in it. I guess I'll probably watch it this weekend, but to Albert Finney.
He's the original angry young man.
He's great. May your journey be light. May you be remembered by those you left behind well, and may the stories they tell be so big and so improbable that they live on forever.
Okay,
that's really good writing.
That was really good. Danny's doing my eulogy.
That's just from the actual movie.
Listen, you know it isn't.
No, it's not?
No.
You just wrote that?
Yeah.
Wow. I knew we paid you for a reason.
Wait, guys, moment. Look at the day and the time. Adam is impressed.
Yeah.
All right.
By Danny.
See, it did.
Wow. All right. Look, man.
I'm sorry, that was too easy.
No, it's happened before.
Okay. Anyway, so nobody really watched the Super Bowl this week, as far as I can tell.
It had
one of the. Did you? I was there for part of it. I was serving two masters on Sunday. I had to go to the Super Bowl and I had to go and see Princess had an event about teen dramas.
Oh wow.
At a bar, and it was very entertaining. I talked about
Degrassi. Not very entertaining.
I have to say, I was way more entertained.
Yeah, well, judging from Twitter, it really wasn't doing. Yeah. You didn't miss much.
Listen, I used to be a huge football fan. I've kind of fallen off because of all this concussion stuff and everything, and just the way the league treats a lot of its players. But
also, nobody wants to watch the Patriots win again.
Well, and I don't like the Patriots, but and I am a person. I played football. I can appreciate the intricacies that go into a defensive struggle. This was not that. This was two teams sucking for most of the game and then maybe one of them pulling it out like a little bit, and then it's okay. Even there have been huge blowouts in the Super Bowl that were more entertaining than that game.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know. There was a great tweet about that, which is these two teams are playing like the winners going to the White House.
That's right. I saw that.
Yeah, that was a good tweet. Anyway, so the game, the ads, as always, some quality stuff in there, some movie trailers, some ads that had a sci-fi bend to them. Here is my question. There was Michelob Ultra. There was TurboTax. There was one other one, Pringles. And I think maybe there was even one other one. So three or four different ads that all had robots in them. And in every single one of them, the robots were sad and being made sad by humanity. What trouble are we asking for in these ads, Adam?
I think it's an obvious expression of our own insecurity, because robots are coming to take over everything.
I guess so, because it was like there was a little Alexa thing.
Jubes, you know, like yeah. Everything, even the things that we thought, you know, mechanical robots couldn't do, AI is coming through to do all that stuff too. So I think these ads are the market's attempt to soothe people by saying, look, we can feel and drink beer and
yeah,
Pringles.
Alexa can't eat a Pringle.
That's exactly right. And so advertising is all about making people feel good. And I think that's when you're faced with a uncertain robot-dominated future,
I'm saying
good to
be
reminded of the things that
I feel that we are unquestionably
human.
Hastening it.
Oh, no, we're already here. No, we're already here.
No, it's going to be so much worse
it
now.
It is. Oh, it's absolutely going
to
be worse.
The robots are going to go, oh, I can't eat a Pringle, huh? Well, there will be no more Pringles because there will be no more man.
You're assuming that the robots have emotions. The robots might operate entirely by, is it efficient to eat Pringles or not?
And we're still dead, because they'll be like, oh, humans are overweight and over-sugared right. and over whatever.
And if they're truly hoping to dominate us, they might say, yes, drink as much beer as you'd like. Eat as many Pringles as you want.
The TurboTax one in particular, where they had the little, it was like a little robot, like a little boy robot. And they said, what do you want to do, little boy robot? He said, I want to be a TurboTax CPA. And they said, you can't, because you'll never have enough emotion to be able to be a CPA. And the robot said, I am sad.
Oh my God. The only other sci-fi.
Because to prove that they hadn't gotten the emotions right. But I have to tell you, if that was designed to make me feel better, an instant failure. Right. I felt so uncomfortable. I was like, this is too real.
Oh, God. The thing I found in terms of science fiction that was funny about the funniest one was the fact that I think we saw the best acting out of James Marsden yet in the Taco Bell Interstellar.
Yeah, I love those ads.
Parody.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny because I'm like, why haven't we seen him in this character? He's joking.
Where's that opportunity?
And what's wrong with his hair? That's the other question I have.
I don't know.
But,
he's been in great films. He was in the one with the dresses, and there was one where he becomes the Easter Bunny. The man's had a legendary career.
Poor Cyclops.
He's back.
Enchanted was a great movie.
I was going to say, and you can't be mad about that. Cyclops and Wolverine, both back.
Yeah. That's true.
Everything's fine.
That's true.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Like, that's what the robot would be saying. Everything's
exactly
fine.
It.
Everything's fine.
Was this the this is the first Super Bowl year that I can remember where there wasn't really an impressive movie trailer.
True.
I guess that's true.
Because the Avengers trailer, I was like,
that was the one I was stunned by.
I was
fully expecting, because most movies, it's like, okay, you get your teaser where they just tease a little bit things, and then you get your full trailer. And Marvel knows it is playing with house money with this, and they are showing
nothing.
It's like, here's some people walking.
And looking
it was amazing.
Pensive.
They might as well just have had Chris Evans sit in that chair and say, some people give a really big trailer at the Super Bowl. Not us. Not us.
You know, honestly, I wanted them to do a Westworld. I wanted somebody to just, like, Rickroll us or something.
You know what it should have been? It should have been Chris Evans coming out in the old Captain America costume saying, so you're expecting to see Avengers Endgame trailer in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
You know, like one of those ads that they had in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, I was so underwhelmed. It was confusing.
Yeah.
I don't know, the way it started, it looked like a healthcare ad.
But they just, they
it looked like a men's, like,
it's just
fill
them,
in the blank.
It's just them. It's a flex, you know? They say they don't need to sell this movie. This movie, everyone who saw Avengers Infinity War is going to see this movie.
Not since Attack of the Clones has there been a movie that was so heavily criticized
Yeah.
That it didn't matter because you knew that people were going to go see the next one.
Yeah.
I mean, did anybody not, if you saw Attack of the Clones, you saw Revenge of the Sith.
That's true.
You know, you were in. That was the end of it. So if you saw Endgame and it got plenty of criticism, you're still, I mean, if you ever saw Infinity War, you're definitely seeing Endgame.
Yeah.
You're just not.
And Infinity War made $1 billion. So this movie already has billions of dollars in the bank. So they don't need to show anything. I like the Captain Marvel spot. It still didn't show much that was new, but I like the tone of it. I like that they kept laying into the higher, further, faster motto.
Yeah, that was good. Did you have a favorite ad that you saw? One that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, the one we haven't touched on yet was the one that everyone was talking about at the end of the game, which was the Bud Light Game of Thrones
Game of Thrones.
Got my lucky loincloth cold Bud Light, comfy throne. I don't have the plague anymore.
Look, it's the Bud Light!
Which was completely unexpected for a lot of people. I mean, I think it's also a flex on the part of Bud Light in some weird way to let your mascot be horribly murdered on screen.
No, but actually,
that's a really...
It was a flex on HBO. Because I did some reading up on this, and HBO demanded, they pushed back tons of times.
Really?
To say, let him just get beat up. He doesn't have to die. This is kind of violent for us. HBO was like, he dies or you don't get the money.
I did not read that.
They like basically were like,
that is amazing.
He needs to die. And we are Game of Thrones. This is what we do. So yeah, I was surprised that showed. Well, I guess at the end of the Super Bowl, it's late enough that they can say that it's not prime time. Right. They couldn't have shown it in like the first half hour.
No.
Like,
they didn't show it on screen. You know, obviously everything happened on screen.
You heard the squelching.
But yeah.
squelching.
I mean, what a weird world we live in now where it's just we're combining ads and for two completely disparate things.
How did you think the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark little vignette ads
were? Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, there were a bunch of them throughout the night. The one that stood out to me was the Where's My Big Toe one, because that's always the first, because I think it's the first story in the book, so I always think about that one, and that was very effective. But my favorite ad, number one, best ad of the night, very simple, very basic, was the setup for the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, so I actually have watched it a couple times. Even there's nothing to get out of it. I just like that, you know, they do the stuff that's that very Rod Serling thing. And he ends on, what is the line? He says, when truth isn't truth, what universe are you even living in? And then they have him walk through the door. He's not on the other side and the theme song plays. And I have to tell you, I get goosebumps every time I watch it. I don't know how it's going to match up with what I want it to be,
right,
but I'm so jazzed. I'm so ready for Jordan Peele's take on The Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. I am too. Yeah. I that was the only one that made me like giggle and happy.
Yeah.
It really did.
It was great. And we'll come back to Jordan Peele pretty soon. But I wanted to talk about the biggest, I mean, for all we know, by the time where this podcast goes up, the news on this will change. But the biggest non-news story that everyone was talking about was the rumor that Star Wars Episode 9, we were going to get the title. And even at one point, there was some discussion about whether or not the title had been leaked already, which was called, The Balance of the Force?
Something like that, yeah.
What do you think of Balance of the Force as a title for a Star Wars movie?
Fine.
But do you think it really, I mean,
you
like, if it's going to be
Adam
the final
wants
chapter.
The Star Wars the, movie. Adam just wants the
I,
movie.
No, I don't put too much weight in the title side of things. I think that would be, and it beats Attack of the Clones. You know, when you first heard Attack of the Clones, everybody reacted like Ewan McGregor on that red carpet, just saying, what? You know, so we haven't had that in a while. I think even Revenge of the Sith was one where people were saying, okay, that's great. You know,
yeah, everybody loves that. There are great stories about when they revealed that title. Revenge of the Sith was a hit.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a title.
Balance of the Force, Awakens is fine, and The Last Jedi is fine. Balance of the Force would be fine. It would be fine. It wouldn't make me feel bad. It wouldn't make me feel, oh my God, this is the best title ever. But there's very few titles that can do that. I mean, you know, even if in a vacuum, Star Wars: A New Hope doesn't really blow my mind, you know. The Empire Strikes Back definitely does, you know. But I think that I don't want to put too much weight in the title side of things. Balance of the Force, I would just say, okay, cool. Let's see what the movie is.
I don't think that's the title. It sounds like the description of the movie.
Mm.
I just think they're gonna have. I really think it would be shorter. That's all. I just don't think Balance of the Force is gonna be.
I mean, it could
I don't
be,
know.
I hope it's called A Force in the Tail.
As long as it's not called, like, you know, midichlorians or something like that.
Oh, that would be terrible. yeah, after this week, again, I think it's going to be called Star Wars Episode 9. Qui-Gon ain't in it.
Oh.
Sorry.
Do you, well, I don't want to talk about that subject. Okay. I think there's more nuance to that subject than the internet allows
for. You can take it to the Slack channel where some of our, old white writers will all
we
say that he did
not
nothing
have,
wrong.
We have
I didn't say
no
that
time.
Either.
We don't have enough time.
So here's the deal.
I haven't had enough coffee.
I don't think Balance of the Force is the title, but I want to know real bad. I didn't realize that I wanted to know. But I've got a weird energy inside of me that is pulling me towards the title of episode 9.
I didn't realize that the title hadn't been released till this. I just thought I didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until this buzz started that it didn't have a title.
Well, there was the Super Bowl, and then there was the big Bob Iger Disney conference call where people usually expect something to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's late. It's late in the game. I mean, this movie comes out in 10 months.
Yeah. Usually there's something.
Just, you know, there's at least a teaser of some sort by this point.
I'm literally checking Twitter just to make sure.
To see if it's actually happened while we're recording.
I'll tell you what, right at the end of the podcast, I will check again just to make sure. But I'm just pointing out, we're doing our due diligence.
Right.
It is not, as of this recording, in the books yet.
If I were Disney, I would probably just hold it for a couple months. Do a teaser
but
and a
where
title.
Where is this coming from, though?
Do a teaser and a title reveal at Celebration.
I don't think they're going to wait that long.
Yeah. You don't think, well, I mean, I don't think, well, I mean, it would be epic if they did wait till May. But
April.
April, that's true. That's Celebration. Yeah. I was thinking May the 4th. But
oh, no, they definitely
that would be the first tease. The first trailer needs to be up by May the 4th.
Well, they'll probably put something out for Celebration.
They would imagine
something out the last time.
Yeah, and that's,
they
I mean,
gotta,
that's,
they gotta
that's
have a name by
eight
then.
Months away from the movie being released. You have to have something. Even for movies that aren't Star Wars, they usually have something.
I wonder if this is not something to do with the fact that they wanted to have as much breathe, as much separation, Solo not doing well, and from some people not liking The Last Jedi.
Right.
I think that was one of the titles. It was
Star Wars
Episode 9, The Last Jedi was good.
Yes.
But Star Wars has an audience that's universal.
I don't know, man. By Solo's category, then.
But I don't think Solo would affect this. I really don't.
I have no idea.
And I think the amount of people who did not like The Last Jedi, while I certainly disagree with them, is not insignificant. It's. And the fact that also, it's not just that, it's also that Star Wars is not the only player in the game anymore.
Yeah.
The biggest tentpole movie of the year is coming out in April. You know, and to say that in a year when there's a Star Wars movie also coming out is very strange. If you'd gone back 10 years and said that that would be the case at some point in the future, I would have told you were nuts.
Yeah.
And yet here we are. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that they are. I don't know that I don't know if they're in some kind of free fall. I don't think that's the case.
No.
I do think that there is something happening wherein they just haven't figured out how to make it comfortable and confident every time, the way that the Marvel movies have been. I just don't think they have found that with Star Wars. They just haven't. So I think that's a part of why we haven't heard the title yet, is that whatever that formula is to make Star Wars something that is bankable, guaranteed, every year where there's not going to be a bunch of controversy, they have not cracked that code. So
right.
Anyway, I'm curious. I wonder if by the time this podcast is live, if it will be out in the world. It's just everybody's been talking about it all week. I mean, it's good for business.
Sure.
That if nothing else. Anyway, hey, have a delightful word from our sponsor. We watched a bunch of movies and a TV show. You want to start? Let's start with the TV show.
Sure.
Because it was from last week. Russian Doll.
Are you going to tell me what's going on?
I keep dying and reliving the same night.
Does it hurt?
Yes.
You seem fine.
Natasha Lyonne's Russian Doll on Netflix. 8 episodes. It's a bit of a Groundhog Day.
It's very much a Groundhog Day.
Bit of a happy death day.
But, you know, it asks the question that I can't believe no one had ever thought to ask. What if Groundhog Day, but someone from the Lower East Side?
Yeah.
Great question. A great question.
I am very, very curious as to how people outside of New York City
yeah,
are receiving the show. Because I will be honest, like, my social media feed has been blowing up about this, but it's all been my friends who live in New York.
Yeah, mine too, yeah.
And because the show is very New York, and it's not even the New York necessarily of now.
No, it isn't. And it's not, and also, again, it's, yeah, you kind of have to go back about 20 years.
Yeah.
And also, it's not just that. It's that it's a couple of square blocks.
Yeah.
Worth of New York. It's specifically one neighborhood. Very particularly, it really is the Lower East Side, which is kind of cool. And I think that that sort of raises a similar question to what you said. Not only, like, if people are watching it from outside of New York and love it, do they just think all of New York is like this?
Right.
Probably
is
do.
That is that their sense? Because it really, I mean, it has become more homogenized with time, I suppose. But when I think of the Lower East, it's got a very particular vibe to it. And it's this.
Yeah. Yeah, it is the most, it's interesting too, because we were watching it and my wife at a certain point was saying, wait, is this a period piece? And then we had to think, no, wait a minute, there was a guy texting on his cell phone at the party in the scene before this. So it's set in modern times, but the feel of the neighborhood is very different from what it is now and a little more what it was, like Danny said, 20 years ago. But it evokes that feeling so well. And it's just, but it's also a really, really good, well-acted, well-written show. I love the casting. I love the diversity of the casting.
The casting was amazing.
That, because again, that is New York.
Yep.
You know, you wouldn't see a bunch of pretty people. You wouldn't see a bunch of white people. You know, you would see Sikhs and people of color and all different. You know, the different flavors of person, and no one in this. I guess Alan's a pretty good looking guy, but like no one in this is what you would expect your typical TV show cast member to look like. The romantic leads are not, you know, chiseled.
Oh yeah. The
type of thing. It's
the guy he's losing his girlfriend to, you would think he was like this really hot dude, and he's not.
Yeah.
He's a normal guy.
Yeah.
But that's part of the story too.
Right. Right. It's just really amazing. Well done in that sense, I think, as well.
It's funny. Because at first I was like, I'm enjoying this, but I don't know how science fiction-y it is. And then when the loop started to really happen, and I'm not spoiling it yet, but when we all know there's a time loop because that's in the trailer. She keeps waking up. But it's just when you get into the story, it's more than just this science fiction, oh my God, how are we getting out of this loop? There is a morality play in there.
Yeah.
And I found that fascinating, but I would not have found that fascinating if it wasn't so well cast and so well acted.
Well, and I think, you know, we always talk about this is that's the science fiction element of the time loop that's happening is great, and it makes for some fun stuff and some really funny moments. Particularly my favorite was when Natasha Lyonne is trying to get down the stairs out of the apartment, the party that she keeps waking up in
but
after she dies.
But she's afraid she's going to fall down the stairs.
Yeah, but she does, and she does over and over. It's very Looney Tunes almost, except the woman's breaking her neck. But the idea that, you know, we always talk about this. The best science fiction isn't just about the science fiction element of it. It's about ideas, and it's about people and what drives us and what makes us up. And I think that, you know, this show does that exceedingly well. I mean, that's the main tentpole that it's built around.
I will say that the geek in me, though, was like, okay, there's some timeline theories here. Okay, are we looking at a fixed timeline, a multiverse, like that part of my brain? And I mean, that's also what, like, me and my boyfriend always love talking about, that kind of stuff. So I did, like, are we looking at a multiverse here? No, I don't think it's a multiverse. Although I think at the end of it, I do think it was a multiverse.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to give it away, but it really is a fascinating, fascinating take on a, not just a story about a New York, but a story about how two people, butterfly effect, two people who don't know each other can have such a huge effect on each other's lives. And then it makes you look at the larger thing. How do what we do and say and what we notice and don't act on affect even strangers, that people, you know?
Well, and I think that's also a very New York thing. And, and the thing that this evokes very well, I think, are these little interactions that happen. You know, you become friends with the guy who works at your deli because you see him every day. Literally, and more than you see your parents or your friends, you know? So,
and the cat that you can't have in your apartment, but she could, but that's at the...
I love that there's a bodega cat.
Yes!
In that's amazing. But also, you know, it's like she has an encounter with the old guy who lives in the building, and they have a conversation, and it's a really deep conversation, and they'll never see each other again. And that happens.
He's adorable, by the way.
All the time in New York. These little moments where you connect with somebody and then you go about your way. And in a city of millions and millions of people, you'll never see each other again. But it was just this moment of connection. And I think that that element of this is really good as well.
So if anybody's listening to this that lives in Iowa that saw it, please tell us what you think in the comments.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are a lot of things to enjoy. One of the things I really appreciate is that Nadia does some things, and I don't like these are minor spoilers, but her path to figuring things out is again very specific. I love that part of her journey is she says, I don't think that she's particularly faithful, but you know, she says, I'll go ask the rabbi. You know, there is a point where it's like, let's go to the synagogue and see, like, maybe the rabbi will have some kind of input on this. Right. And that whole proceeding is really smart. And they do eventually address her background. She talks about the fact that, you know, her grandparents are survivors of the Holocaust. And that's an element of the story, too. There is a really innate Jewishness to the tale. Which
the chain around her neck.
Yeah, I really appreciate all that stuff is great. Really smart storytelling. And it's also about mental illness. And it's real good. And I love her big, ridiculous red wig. It's so good.
Is it a wig?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was her real hair.
I thought that was her hair dyed.
I believe that is a wig.
Okay.
I mean, ask a hair and makeup person, but I am pretty confident that that is a wig.
My favorite line, life's a box of timelines. I am getting that on a shirt.
You want to find you a woman who says cockroach.
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 And ipso facto.
My favorite line was, I got a flight to Sweden in the morning, so
yes.
You could leave so I could get it in.
I could get it in, right. Yeah. That was everything.
You could get out
so I could get it in.
That's what she said, yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Favorite line was when she was like, talking to her aunt, she was like basically talking about interacting more with people, and she was like, people though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
I mean, this is, you know what, the other thing too that struck me about this is just remembering how long Natasha Lyonne has been around.
Yes.
I mean, she's 39 now, and she's playing a 36-year-old in this movie, and you're thinking back to American Pie, she must have been an actual teenager at the time.
Yeah.
But she was kind of the older and wiser of the teenagers, at least in terms of the character that she was playing. Yeah.
And she's on Orange is the New Black?
And
most recent?
I mean, she's the centerpiece of this show in a lot of ways. Obviously, she's the main character. She wrote a lot of it.
She directed
the finale.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's just phenomenal work from her. The best thing I think I've ever seen her do. Not that she's been bad, but it's just really, really...
She's garbage except for this. The whole thing, you can just throw it in the bin, but this you can keep.
Yeah.
No. You're hilarious.
She's amazing in the show.
But I have to say, though, Charlie Barnett kept up. At first, he kind of annoyed me because I thought his character was just going to be like, I don't know, let's always be happy. Please. Actually, cue Lego Movie. But it turned into, oh no, he's been through some stuff. There's something really going on here.
Yeah, the way his character is developed is excellent.
Yeah, and I was tearing up a little bit. I was like, oh, please help him. But in the end, they sort of help each other, and I love that.
Yeah. I mean, the show has two major twists, I think, and I don't want to get into the second one because it's really central to the main part of the story. The first one is even that he shows up at all, so I guess we're honestly revealing something a little bit.
Mild spoilers.
That there is another main character in the show.
That's caught in a loop. That's the only thing we'll say.
Let me ask you this before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular. People like it. There have been conversations as to whether or not it should keep going.
It's meant to be three seasons.
Yeah.
Meant to be is... So there, but there also Natasha Lyonne has said stuff about is it a continuation of Nadia's story?
Right.
Or... is this going to be sort of a legacy thing where it's an anthology thing where it'll be somebody else's story?
I want somebody else. And then them to tangentially see what's happening or run into one of them. Or maybe one of the characters, like I would love her friend. I cannot remember the Asian woman's name that's in that.
Maxine.
There
I need
you go.
It to be her because Maxine I gets love her.
Or she should just be in it in some way. Just because I want to, Greta Lee must have
Greta
been
Lee.
Driven insane having to say, sweet birthday baby. Like you think about it takes multiple takes every time you film any scene in a show. But then you add the loop element in. She had to say that line thousands of times.
Yes.
And in the same exact tone over and over. But yeah, so I would love to see her pop again. I don't want it to be about
different
Nadia
people?
Because or Alan either, because I love that it's open-ended.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a little spoiler too. I'm sorry. But it, without giving it too much away, like, there's a bit of an open ending to it. There is a bit of a wrap, but there's also a bit of an open ending. And I don't want to know more. I want to just imagine where that goes from there, and we can tell a different story. Because I love stories like that. I love stories where it's like the ending, you're not like, oh, everything's got a nice little bow on it, and we understand everything, and it's been explained in a PowerPoint document. You know, I am good with their story and where it ended. And I would just love to, you want to get elements of this or get different characters that are involved, have them show up or whatever, have Nadia be the new horse. I don't know. But like, that would kind of be a weird ending. But I just would love to see it go in a different direction and leave those stories as told.
But to answer your question, it should continue. I definitely want it to continue. I agree with what you're saying.
I would be happy to never hear another thing about it again. I mean, yeah. I would talk about it on its own. No, I loved it. I just, you know, sometimes when I love things, I want them to exist.
Oh, in that.
As they are in
Amber.
Don't
break it.
Yep. As someone who appreciates the standalone fantasy sci-fi book, I completely agree.
But, you know, if it's three, I just, you know, Supernatural was supposed to be five seasons. I'm just putting it out there. They had a five-year plan. And we're 14 in, and there's already renewed for a 15.
You know what it is? Just get everybody involved in that show back together to do something else. Like a theater company, right?
Oh, okay.
You know, it's like a theater.
I mean, that can work in sometimes.
Well, that's like a fish called Wanda. American Horror Story does that though, right? Same people, just different
same
stories.
People behind like the production team, but not necessarily the same. I'm saying like, you know, when I...
You want to bring everybody together.
Yeah, you do the indie theater thing, right? And you have you get together and you put up a show. And
I mean, I want to keep some stuff. So a quick shout out to my, to my wife's boss, Jen Rogan, who was the costume designer.
Oh, wow.
On the show. You can really tell. Yeah, she's also the costume designer on Orange is the New Black.
She did an amazing job.
But I think one of the great challenges of a show like that is that basically the costume that you see people in, that's what they're wearing. You know what I mean? Because you're basically getting a day, maybe two. Mm-hmm. So you only have so much you can play with. So every single piece has to really help define who that character is. And so I would say, certainly, especially for a character like Maxine, who literally just has the one costume the whole goddamn movie, that costume has to tell such a huge story, yep. And it does so well.
Yeah. I need you to ask her where Greta Lee's light blue blouse came from, because I need that.
Okay. I'll see if I can crack that case for you. I mean, some of that stuff is probably built, to be honest.
I'm sure.
Some of it was probably
And then they got to build
too.
Like 17 of them.
Yes. My wife was like, don't bring me up. And I was like, I'll do it. She made copies of a lot of the costumes that, so there is the main one, and then they make doubles and triples and quadruples.
Yeah, because things rip and get stuff spilled.
Sure.
I mean,
especially on a show wherein you're doing a loop of you need certain circumstances wherein something does get torn on purpose, things like that. So yeah. Anyway, my wife made some of the doubles for those coats and things. That's kind of fun. Anyway, that is real good. And now, I feel like we should save Lego Movie for last, because it's the big. Can we talk about horror noir?
We've always loved horror. It's just that horror hasn't always loved us.
Black people play a particular role in horror films.
If there was somebody black, they would be the first to die.
it wasn't quite a debut, was it? It was like a New York premiere.
It was a
Philly premiere.
It was a New York premiere. The LA premiere was a day, 2 days before. Monday, I went to the premiere of Horror Noir at BAM Rose Cinemas here in New York. There was a Philly premiere, I think, the day after. And then Toronto, I think, was the day after that. And basically, Horror Noir, and I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, it dropped on Shudder. It's streaming now on Shudder. And it's Shudder's first original show. It's their first original, not just documentary, or it's literally the first thing that they're not, because Shudder usually has other horror movies that they show, but this is their first original movie, and it's basically a documentary about the black presence in horror movies. Directors, actors, writers, authors, historians, everybody's involved. I actually know a couple people, like Tanana Reeve Dew, who is the professor. She's actually a professor of horror. She's also a writer herself. She's written several speculative lit pieces. She is the writer and producer. And there's a website called Graveyard Shift Sisters, which is literally like the only website about black women in horror.
Ashley Blackwell?
Mm-hmm. Ashley Blackwell that runs that. And I know her well too. And I was like so excited that this, I remember when they were working on it, and I was so excited this came out. And I know people are going to say, why, Karma, you don't like horror? I'm like, it's a documentary. I can watch that. So, because the screaming stops. What's fascinating about this that a lot of people don't realize is it is an adaptation of a nonfiction book by the same name. And the name of the book is also horror noir. But it's called Horror Noir, Blacks in American Horror Films from the 1890s to Present. And it is written by Robin Means Coleman, who is also one of the other producers on the film. It was done really well because there's a lot of things that I didn't know. And it's funny because I went with a couple of people who didn't know. Actually, Angelique was there too. And she's a horror fan. There's a lot of things I didn't know. There was a lot of, for instance, I know Night of the Living Dead, but the one that was done later, I've never seen the original one that came out in 1968. I didn't realize that it starred Dwayne Jones, a black man. I had no idea that he was star of the movie. And at that time, when I think of 1968, and it's the same year that King was killed, having him in charge, and at the end, he was killed by a white mob because they thought he was doing the killing. And it was just this whole weird, like, just to think that it came out at this time, all of these things were happening, and the metaphor of who the living dead were, it's just this whole other thing that you put into it. So, and they didn't just talk about the movies and the actors themselves. They also talked about the archetype of the black guy that always dies first and things like that, and not just horror movies, any movie. And they also talked about developing a lot of characters and storylines, like what it took to get Candyman made. And Tony Todd, you know, who's like been in a huge amount. In fact, it is Tony Todd's version of Night of the Living Dead that I know. I did not, like I said, know about the 1968 version. So and what was great was they had directors. The way it was laid out, it wasn't just talking heads and then cut to a clip. What they did was they got a bunch of different actors, directors, historians, like I said, Tanana Reeve, Ashley, Ernest Dickerson, Tony Todd, a bunch of different people in a theater, and they would have them have a conversation about their favorite horror film, about films, about things they were interested in. And what was fascinating about it was it turned into, instead of just a standalone talking head documentary with cutaway to, you know, blood and gore, it turned into a conversation which happened to have real life examples of what was going on. And I learned so much, and everybody was there. It was like all kinds of people at this event, and everybody who saw it said the same thing, like, my God, this is like, everybody needs to see this. If you're a fan of horror, even what it took to make certain shots work, and it doesn't just stick with horror, it goes into all kinds of genres, because horror even went into like blaxploitation and fantasy and sure. stuff like that. And then
talk about Eve's Bayou.
Yes, they did, like, talk
maybe,
about
maybe
Eve's
people
Bayou.
Don't say that's a horror movie, but it's a horror
movie.
It
is movie. A horror movie. Sure. And even Jada Pinkett Smith and being the final girl, which was a term I did not know about, for those mm-hmm. of you who don't know, final girl in a horror movie is actually the last woman who's actually alive to tell the story. She was the first black female final girl in Tales of the Crypt. Which was
Demon Knight.
Sorry, Demon Knight.
I mean, that is his Tales from the Crypt.
It is,
Knight.
Yes.
You put them together,
both,
and
yes,
you get it.
You're right. Demon Knight and Billy Zane, who was so hot then. But what was so funny was that movie was so campy. Like, when you go back now, it's like, it makes me laugh. But
I love that movie.
It was, but the storyline,
Bill Sadler's finest work.
Yes, and then the blood of Christ and all that kind of stuff, and becoming the Demon Knight, and yeah it was amazing. So also, I don't know, she's taking the same stuff that Cicely Tyson's taking because she's not aging. So, but it was actually it was a lot of fun. And if you haven't, check out Horror Noir on Shudder. It is streaming, and it's fantastic. And you'll learn so much. And then the other really cool thing Shudder is doing is all the movies that they mention in the movie, they are currently running now.
They've got a lot of them. Yeah, I was going to say that was one of the first things that I noticed is that when you go to Shudder, the main site, you'll see Horror Noir, and then right next to it, they have this film that is a little less well known called Ganja and Hess.
Yep.
And so that is there. And yeah, I mean, even if you didn't.
And Ganja and Hess, they had a really good thing about Ganja and Hess, too.
Yep.
Because.
Well, it's sort of a counterpoint to blaxploitation.
It is.
Because people thought about it in those terms, but if you expect that type of movie, that's not what you're going to get. It's just, it came out in the 1970s, but it is about something very different. Yeah, that's a really interesting film. And I was going to say something that I really liked about it is that on that note, one of the people that they had involved, one of the people that they interviewed, was William Crane.
Yes.
Who is the man who directed Blackula,
mm-hmm.
which to me is like, if you're going to, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, no, it was.
And excellent. I just feel like the guy doesn't get as much, dude. There's a lot of films that they mention that I feel like people don't even know about, but is, you know, they mentioned there's a movie from the 90s called Death by Temptation. I was like, it's on my shelf.
Yes.
You know, vinegarsyndrome.com. You can get a copy of it. It's a weird movie, but it's there. But yeah, it's really great. They brought in so many interesting people. I do think that the, you know, maybe not talking heads, as you said, they usually have two people in a room
mm-hmm.
sort of talking to each other, which I think does a lot of the heavy lifting. But there are so many voices there that are worth hearing. And of course, if you've been paying a lot of attention to social media, Rachel True is there, and it's good that she's there because
right, and it was she's so odd.
I said, boy, they're really, she's, you know, like 20 some odd years later, finally getting her due.
Another one who I need to drink whatever she's drinking because she's not, she looks great, but she was hilarious. And now my joke now, and now you'll get it, Danny, when I see you. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
It's true.
The joke that Rachel True was saying was that basically, and for those of you who don't know who she is, did we talk about who she was? We didn't know who she was.
She's in The Craft.
She is in The Craft, even though people kind of don't acknowledge that for some reason. She's the black one. Okay. And but her character at the time, she was frustrated because she felt she could do so much more, but they kept having her say to all the other characters, "Are you okay?" She said, "I must have said, 'Are you okay?' 9,000 times on that film." And it was basically indicative of the time. It was like, we know we need more diversity, but you're here to support all these other girls. So
yeah,
and it's funny because a lot of that happened in many films. And you were mentioning Ganja and Hess. Ganja and Hess, which was a real horror movie, but it was more like a thriller with a really good story behind it. But because they really wanted a blaxploitation film, they weren't letting Bill Gunn do what he wanted. And they ended up recutting the film and releasing it on VHS like as a completely different movie because they wanted it to be like some type of sexy blaxploitation thing, and it wasn't. So anyway, just when you get a chance, go to Shudder, check it out. It's literally, when you watch the film, it's going to make you want to watch more movies. And that's what I think a really good documentary about the genre should do.
Agree. You want to talk about Lego Movie, the second one?
Sure.
A lifetime has passed since the horrific events of Taco Tuesday. Once, everything was awesome. Now, everything is bleak.
Hey, Lucy. I brought you coffee.
We saw that movie.
We did see that movie. What did you guys think compared to the first movie? Lego.
I had a journey.
Okay.
You had
movie.
A journey.
I did. I had a journey.
Take us with you.
I went from, as over the course of the film's running time, I went from tolerating it to enjoying it to really liking it a lot. By the end of the movie, I was really on board.
What was the thing that made you really, really like it?
Listen, I think there's a couple of things. One, the meta story that's built around the actual story that's happening. I mean, that was obviously, you know, this is a movie that came out a while ago, so I think we can all talk about it now. You know, the meta story of the first one, which was this child's relationship with his father and how it was expressed through the different way they played with Legos. That was a lot, I think, of what really grabbed people, the emotional core of the movie in the first one. And the meta story in this one, I don't think it's a big spoiler to say there is one.
I mean, they literally set it up in the first movie. It is exactly what they said at the end of the first movie.
I think it's really well done and smart and says a lot about growing up and family and things like that. And I really appreciate that. Also, one of the things I think that people were wondering about this movie, because in the first one, you know, the big theme song, Everything is Awesome. And it's this relentless cheeriness. And
it makes you want to hurt people.
Well, but in the run up to the Lego Movie 2, people are saying, does this really have a place in a world where everything is not awesome right now? I mean, whatever you think about various things, we can all agree that it's a little rough out there in the world at the moment. And I think that's probably an understatement. And does that type of vibe and this Emmett's, you know, pure spirit of everything's great and it can be great no matter what, blah, 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 blah. Does that have a place in the modern world that we live in? And I think that the movie does a really good job of addressing that.
Yeah, it does.
Specifically. I mean, there is a moment where all the characters sing about how everything is not awesome.
Not okay. Yeah.
Everything is not okay and what to do about that. And I just think the fact that it acknowledged that was really smart. It could have not done that. It could have retreaded the vibe of the first movie entirely, and it did not, I think. And I really appreciated that. And I just think Phil Lord and Chris Miller, like, they have a finger on the pulse of this kind of wacky but clever humor. You saw it a lot in Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it in the first Lego movie, and you see it here. That really works. I mean, I cracked up a lot throughout this movie.
You know what did it for me?
What?
Bruce Willis. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
That's a spoiler.
Yeah.
I didn't say where it was, though. I didn't say where it was. I didn't say where it was. But yeah, it was. Here's the thing. I think I, maybe because it was the first one and we'd never seen it, the Lego movie before, I think I felt like I was really had a lot more fun in that one. I guess going into this, because it picked up sort of exactly where, not even sort of, exactly where the last one left off. I guess I don't want to say I was underwhelmed. I guess I felt I was going to go through that emotional journey again, and I didn't go there, but I did enjoy it.
Mm.
And I do think it's that you. I think you had said that at you called a family member at the end. It like really pulled your heartstrings.
Yeah.
For me, the one thing that I thought was fascinating was there's a thing about perception in the film that I like, and I don't want to give it away, but I like the fact that was addressed. Like something that you think is really, really bad might not be, and something that you think is really amazing might be terrible.
Right.
And I kind of like the personification of that. I do think at one point I'm like, right, I will be taking or buying this. She just got born for my niece. It's funny when a family member has a child, like everything is now filtered. Like, can they see this? I would buy this for them so they could see it later. But this is a really good lesson. There's lessons in here for kids. It reminded me a lot of Ralph Breaks the Internet. Not that it's the same movie, but Ralph Breaks the Internet is a, you know, continuation of Wreck-It Ralph. And that was the same thing. People came in thinking it was going to be really entertaining, which it was. But then there was this moral. There was this, you know, a fable almost to it. And it was like, oh, okay. I came here, you know, to be entertained, and now I'm getting a lesson, which is cool. That's what I felt. I was like, okay, there's the lesson. I don't want to give away the live action parts, but and that stuff was funny. And please, 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 if you see this movie, stay for the credits, because I honestly think the credits had some of the best music.
Yeah,
in the whole movie.
Yeah, and there's a spoiler. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. The first movie has a big production at the end during the credits while they roll that involved the Lonely Island.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the Lonely Island does return for this song, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and I don't think an assistant producer has ever gotten that much love in
He's
a
tight.
Movie ever.
He's tight. Now I have a new goal in life. That's what I want to be. What did you think about the cast additions? Because you've got Stephanie Beatriz, you've got Tiffany Haddish, you've got Maya Rudolph, you've got Richard Ayoade.
I thought Tiffany Haddish was actually really good. I want to know if that was her singing.
It was. It's in the credits.
She can sing. Yeah. She can sing. I was impressed. And, you know, like Broadway singing.
I actually paid attention to that because I was very curious about that as well. And, you know, at the end of the movie,
yeah,
they list who performed what song, and it was her.
I was impressed.
The music is great. Throughout, it doesn't.
Yes, I texted it to you, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I said, it turns out, or whatever I wrote, in fact, this song did get stuck inside my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a new song. There is a new song, a new
And it will literally get stuck inside your head.
I don't think there's anything that's going to pop the way Everything Is Awesome did.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that just was kind of its own cultural moment.
Yeah.
When the first movie came out. But it's still really, like, everything in there, it's really good and a lot of fun.
I think my only issue with Maya Rudolph, I don't have an issue with her. I think she's amazing. But I was like, okay, first of all, I just thought it was funny. It was like, Will Ferrell couldn't make it? Like, he'd only come to the studio? Like, what? Where is he?
Yeah, just like Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I think he had a day.
Yeah, they ADR'd him for a few hours.
Yeah. That's all right. I mean, I love Maya Rudolph, so she can come and take his place
any
old time.
He probably did his part from home.
He probably did. She was hilarious, though, for the few minutes she was there. And it took me a minute, but I did not realize that was the same son, because he'd grown so much. Like, he's so big now. I kept thinking, are you too old to be? No, why am I saying you're too old to be with Legos when I know my brother has some?
Yeah.
But
but I mean, and the movie is partially about that, yeah. You know, and the way that the things have changed in terms of how he relates to the toys, you know, versus how he used to, which is especially poignant given the first movie and the character he was and the what he was trying for in the first film.
I also thought it was interesting the dynamic, the family dynamic was great, and I thought it was lovely how he did realize, you know, at the end, and I'm again not giving it away, but that relationship was mended. I like that.
Yeah,
that was sweet.
Danny, we didn't get your overall take on the.
Danny, you're really quiet.
I am. Oh, it's.
You didn't like it.
It was good. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Compared to the first one?
It's funny because I didn't watch the first one. It kind of snuck by me. I know it was a cultural touchstone or whatever, but I watched it the day of. I said, I should probably watch it. So I watched it in the morning and then I went and watched the.
So you had like 4 hours of Lego Movie.
Yeah, I just kind of absorbed all of it at once. And so for me, it was nice. And my wife said, I'm sure you don't need to watch the first movie. Oh, no.
Yeah.
You better. Here's what I'll say. I think that the Lego movies are kind of the new Toy Story movies, which is weird because we're getting a Toy Story movie at the end of this year.
We are.
So I wonder, you know, how they're going to play off of each other. What does Toy Story have to offer in a world where we have now two main Lego movies plus Lego Batman and the Ninjago stuff and things like that? Like, where does that sort of fit into the cultural zeitgeist? So that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I was going to make some glib joke about Bad Cop not being in the movie, but I'll let it slide.
Yeah, the most interesting thing, though, is also when you think about genre medium is not strange for selling toys. Like, right. Like the Transformers movie back in the day was this G.I. Joe. Like, they made the animated series in the movies to sell the toys. So even though you were talking about Toy Story, it's not going to slow the Lego franchise down at all, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. No, it was more, where does Toy Story fit now?
Thematically. And I think...
A world where there already is this Lego universe.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing, is that the first Lego movie, when it was coming out, everyone was expecting, this is just going to be a way to sell Legos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certain it did that. But it also, you know, they went the extra step, I guess, of adding this emotional core to the film that nobody was really expecting. And this movie definitely doubles down on that. And it's a similar emotional core, as Danny pointed out, to Toy Story, about our relationship to the
absolutely
toys
there is a moment where you were saying everything's not awesome.
Yeah.
I think of that as the Toy Story 3 everybody holding hands moment.
Yeah,
it's got a little bit of that, not to ruin the movie, but it does. I mean, it's not quite that, but it definitely has got that vibe. I feel like Lego Movie Part Dos has got a real blend of Toy Story 2 and 3 to it.
It depends how much you want to really think about a movie that's called The Lego Movie 2, the second part. Because it's interesting. There's something that happens. There's a plot point, and we talked about this a little after we saw it. Danny and I saw it at the same screening. There's a plot point in this film. The first movie, all of the fantastical stuff that happens can kind of be written off as an expression of the imagination of the kid, right? And mm-hmm, how he's playing with these toys. In this movie, there is something that happens that kind of makes it as if what's going on with the toys isn't just an expression of the kid's imagination. These things are actually alive and they have agency and they can do things
and
outside.
Sentience, yes.
And do things outside of being played with and really big, huge things that, again, I don't want to give away because it gives away a major plot point. But like, that was a little bit jarring in the sense of being like, well, wait a minute, what are the rules now? I don't quite.
Did his brain do that?
If that character can do that, does that mean that, you know? So again, at the end of the day, I don't think that we should think that much about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the Lego Movie Part 2, and just go and have a good time.
It's entertaining, it's totally fun.
And feel the feelings. But
I think that maybe this kid is going to be part of the Russian Doll second season.
There you go.
I cracked the case.
Yeah.
That's the deal. He's actually related. He's a cousin of Nadia's or something.
Yeah.
There you go. Glad I could help. Or Alan's, I guess. Anyway. All right. That's it. We've explained Lego Movie 2 perfectly.
Yes.
Let us know what you think about Lego Movie 2. Let us know what you thought about Russian Doll, what you thought about horror noir. If you haven't watched Horror Noir, jump on that.
Please
absolutely
watch it,
worth a Shudder subscription. And what was your favorite Super Bowl ad? And do you have a good Super Bowl? You have a good Star Wars title?
I would like tell to hear us it. What the tell us what the Star Wars titles are.
Yeah, I want
to
know.
I want it to be.
Oh wait, hold on. I promised.
You're gonna look it up. I would like it to
right
be called
now, right
Star
as
Wars
we leave,
Episode 9.
Has somebody declared what the title is yet?
Star Wars
has
Episode 9,
up?
The last movie. That's what I want it to be called.
Yeah.
What do you want it to be called?
I don't care.
You don't care.
I don't. In all the things in the world that I can say that I want,
the naming
of the Star Wars movie is not one of them. I wanted to have a name. They should just call it Star Wars.
There you go. That would be hilarious.
Yeah. Wow. There you go. Yeah. I think they should call it Star Wars, A Star Wars Story.
I saw that one on Twitter.
There you go. All right. So
nothing
you know
up.
I stole
you
that.
You didn't
that's
find anything?
Dang right.
No, it's still not there. All right. That's the end of the VAR podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have not subscribed, please subscribe. If you've never given a review, please leave us a review. It is very helpful. And make sure that you're listening to everybody else in the Sci-Fi Wire podcast family. Strong female characters, Fandom Files, and the Battlestar Galactica cast. Behind the Panel, grief, so many, the official podcast for the TV show that's on right now.
Deadly Class.
There you go. All those podcasts, and go on to Amazon too. And you can listen to Adam Slow Jam the News.
Exactly.
So many things. Thank you for listening as we wrap up. Where can folks find y'all on the internet?
You can find me, Karma the Blur Girl, TheBlerdGurl, all over the internet, but mostly Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me at Rock the Faces on Instagram.
And my name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N. Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.